We have a call. So I would ordinarily ask someone to take that, but stand by a moment. Hello, WRFR. All right, stand by. Yeah, that's right, folks. We've got our Maine State Prison correspondent, Dino Brown. And so Dino Brown has been our correspondent for some time, and we're about to get another update from him. Dino, can you hear me?
Yes, good morning, Ron.
Good morning.
Good morning. How's things going there?
It's a beautiful day out here, and, I was just looking out of the harbor. The floats have all begun to reappear. The boats are still all wrapped up in that shrink wrap,
I used to work down at O'Hara's Marina.
Oh, is that right? So you got familiar with that season.
Yes, I did. I started in April, and I started in May.
Huh.
And we were putting the masts on the boats.
And meanwhile, those, the floats for all the moorings started to appear, like freckles across the harbor.
Yeah.
And it's funny, there's just like one or two spots in the entire harbor that are not open to moorings, and someone's applied to do a sponge and eelgrass, like a seagrass farm there.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see. It's just sowing things right on the bottom there, and evidently there's some interest in marine aquarium circles for that kind of thing.
That should bring in more marine life, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you're right, habitat. And, that's something. So,
if we keep the scallop draggers off it, we'll be all set.
Well, it's pretty shallow. Yeah, you're right about that. Well, I think part of the request will be if they drag up any of these sponges, which will be grown on the rocks and all that, throw them back. But, I know the guys that scallop in the harbor, so probably won't have any trouble there. But, hey, it's great to have a harbor professional on the line here.
Well, I'm not quite a professional.
Well, for some time, though.
Yeah, I love it. I grew up swimming down in the off the breakwater and down behind the Courier Gazette building there.
I wonder, when you were there were probably a lot more fishing boats than there are right now.
There were quite a few.
Yeah, let's see. There's still the Western Sea.
We had the 40 fathoms there. Fisher Engineering is. There was a fish plant there. Got a lot of bait from them. And then, of course, you had O'Hara's. Used to fish for mackerel down there.
Right. O'Hara moved his boats off to Alaska.
I went fishing out of Dutch Harbor on the...
No kidding.
On the Constellation, yeah.
Now, was that crabbing?
No, we were dragging for groundfish. Wreck sole, rock sole.
No lie.
Got a lot of black cod.
What time of year was it?
February.
So it was some mean weather out there. Were you chopping ice off that boat while you're...
I was below deck processing.
Oh, okay.
I didn't last too long. I'd just gotten out of prison after an 11-year prison sentence. First job I had. Boy, it was some demanding work. 16 hours a day. Wasn't quite cut out for it.
Well, they say that there's pretty good money in that.
Oh, yeah, if you hit them doing roasting. Actually, I think it was March, because it was right before I went to work for O'Hara's.
Mm.
When I came back, O'Hara's gave me a job because they put up my plane fare and money for my gear and everything I needed to get started out there. And they gave me an opportunity to work for them down at the marina to at least pay that back.
Well, Charlie, good. That's really decent of them.
Yeah. I remember as a kid fishing down there off the wharf. One year, my brother Dan Brown and my brother David and I wanted to go fishing with them and their friends, and they wouldn't let me. And, being the youngest brother and all. So
what were you catching, like mackerel in their season?
Right, flounder. But they come running, no, the flounder are running, get your rod, we're going fishing. Because I was crying because they wouldn't let me go fishing with them. All right, come on, let's go, we're going to O'Hara's.
Oh, Lordy, is that right? I grew up inland, and it was with the farm ponds, the same thing, the bluegills, the sunfish are running, and the bass are up.
Well, they tricked me. They didn't want me going fishing with them, but my mom said they had to take me along, so they said, go get your gear, the mackerel are running. So they run in there, get their gear, I went to get mine, and when I come out, they were gone, but that's okay, I knew they was headed for O'Hara's. I got down to O'Hara's, there wasn't a soul around.
Huh.
And they went off somewhere else to fish without me.
Well, you had your pole and all, right?
Yeah, and some nice guy down at O'Hara's. There was a pile of mackerel they'd caught.
Mm-hmm.
And he let me take one of the big blue carts filled with mackerel back home. And I was pushing that cart, and my brothers saw that and their friends, and they were like, holy cow, where'd you get all those fish? I said, over there, O'Hara's, they're running crazy. And I wheeled them home, and my mom, yeah. She made them help me clean them. Put them in the back porch, pickled them and everything. We had gallons of pickled mackerel.
Well, you know. Well, there you go, just desserts.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so what's happening now inside the Big Stone Hotel there?
I'm a guest of the governor. it's been pretty hectic week here, pretty violent. Started out with a friend of mine, Josh, was been dealing with the property officer here. And
what is the property officer?
He's the guy who's in charge of making sure you have, like, whatever comes, your clothing, your state-issued clothing and bedding and things like that. And whatever personal property that you have, he inventories it, keeps track of it, and keeps a lookout for it in other people's property. And generally, he does a pretty good job. It's a pretty demanding job. But the man, I think he's bipolar, and it's not right for me to make an assessment mm-hmm. like that, but I have seen him one minute be the nicest guy you could know, and then the next minute just unleash on somebody and hit him with a barrage of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very provoking, and most inmates deal with it. If a guard gets in your face and says, I don't give a F about you or your F and this, that, and the other thing, mm-hmm. and as far as I'm effing concerned, you can go straight to the effing hole. You know, if you say anything in response while he's doing that, then you get a write-up for provoking him.
Wow.
Provoke means to cause to react, if mm-hmm. my understanding of the dictionary is correct. And when you cause a man to react to something like that, you're the one doing the provoking, not the other way around. But this man's allowed to do what he wants.
So he doesn't consider that provoking the inmates, it's simply him letting off steam.
Or just doing whatever he wants because nobody's going to hold him in check.
Mm.
Nobody's going to say, look, you're not talking to people like that. He gets to do it and then, you know, did it to the wrong guy, and then Josh went over the counter and chased him. I don't know if he hit him or not, but he's out in the hole and he's probably going to be there for a couple of years now because this guard is allowed to do what he wants. What's going to happen when somebody hurts this man? When somebody comes along and says, look, you're not talking to me like that. I'm not letting you.
Hmm.
You know, they don't seem to realize that, you know, the prisoners have some say in how much they control their actions.
So, wait a minute now, though. You're saying that an inmate named Josh finally couldn't take the abuse from this fellow and
he jumped over the counter and chased him. Went after him. I don't know if he hit him or not, but he got lugged for jumping over the counter. Something mm-hmm. happened, but I mean, obviously, they got the situation under control, or maybe he used some restraint. I don't have all the particulars on it.
Now, does all this sort of occur when there's some kind of property question going on?
Well, he got some new sneakers, and he has to turn in a pair of old sneakers. So mm-hmm. he brings his pair of old sneakers down, and then this guy's saying, those aren't your sneakers, the ones he's throwing away. Well, whose are they? Well, we don't know whose they are, but they're not yours. Because our paperwork doesn't show that you have those or whatever. Well, maybe your paperwork's wrong. These are my sneakers. I bought them. Here's a receipt for the canteen I bought them from. Whole hassle. You've been dealing with this guy for a week on this issue, and he just lit into him, and he's like, don't talk to me like that. You know, and he just, I'll talk to you any effing way I want. Boom, it was on.
Oh, my.
That was just the beginning. But the problem there is that, you know, they put cameras and microphones in the education department to try and bag a teacher for being a little too friendly with prisoners, and there was nothing to it. It was based on information given by a guy who had a grudge against another prisoner. But
you would think that each guard ought to have a little microphone on them, you know, that goes back to somewhere. So you can see everything they say, because that's part of their professional job, whatever they're saying while they're on duty.
Yeah, that would be awesome, but the problem with it is,
mm-hmm.
Well, from their perspective, I suppose it should start first. I mean, every moment of their day would be monitored. But they'd have no time for privacy or whatever, and if they said something accidentally, then...
You're right, yeah, that is the drawback. You have to keep remembering that these are just ordinary Joes and Janes like anyone else.
Right, but the few exceptions, when you have enough people speaking out, saying, listen, this guy is abusive, he's corrupt, he's lying, whatever, he's provoking people, you know... over the years, you get enough complaints, you'd think somebody would say, you know what, we need to watch this situation. Maine hasn't become like most prisons.
How's that?
With the violence. Well, with the inmates, you know, being violent. Or violence being a viable tool to control your environment. The guards go home at the end of the day because they have permission to from the prisoners. In essence, I mean, the prisoners have decided that they're not going to take a life, or that they're not going to, you know, maim somebody. There's a certain degree of mutual respect that works.
Sort of that the guards didn't sentence you in there, and
right, everybody's here for whatever reason. You got to make the best of it. Life goes on. Blah blah blah.
So you're saying, as far as you know, then the level of violence within the Maine state prison system is a lot lower than other states.
Oh, certainly.
Are Mainers just more sensible about this sort of thing? More laid back?
No, I think that part of it is fear, and the lack of a need for it. We don't have gangs. We don't have, you know, people trying to force their will too much on each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's kind of coming to a halt here, too, progressively, but when an officer is allowed to provoke people, and you can complain to the unit manager or the investigator or whoever, well, nothing gets done. The man is permitted to keep doing what he's doing, and it keeps happening. Whether they talk to him off to the side or not, I don't know, but if they do, it's making no effect. This property officer just lays right into... to people at will, and you know, when it culminates in a certain degree of violence, then they're going to jump up and say, we need more money for what, another deputy warden? I mean, we've got four or five deputy wardens here. In Thomaston we had half the prisoners and deputy warden. We come out here, we double the population, and we got four or five deputy wardens to go with it.
Really? Like the number of them increased, whatever they call it in mathematics.
Exponentially. That would be my word.
It's too much. Hey, let me just say here, we're talking with Dean Brown. He's our inmate correspondent at the Maine State Prison. And you can't call in right now, but you can call in after Dean signs off a little bit later at 594-0721.
And I'll be listening.
There you go.
I can now.
Okay, we're gonna take a real short music break. Can you hang on for a minute?
Yes, I can.
All right, stand by. Now, joining us on the phone is our inmate correspondent, Dean Brown. Dean, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. You know, one thing people are often curious about is, what is the menu like there? Is it like high school, you know, high school lunches, or, is it, you know, what is it like when they feed you all?
When they feed us?
Typical menus or what?
About every meal has chicken in it somewhere. They got a good government deal on it, I guess. Let's see, Sundays, Thursdays, Tuesdays, we have a hot breakfast, which would either be pancakes, waffles, French toast, or eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Scrambled always, of course. And then the other mornings, it's dry cereal. Toast with peanut butter, homemade jelly. And I don't mean homemade jelly as in, you know, mom's nice preserves, but it's like extra strong Jell-O.
Oh.
They make it themselves out of Jell-O mix.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of,
well, it's, yeah, it's different.
You know, we have like a chicken stew, and then we'll have a beef stew with no beef or not much beef, and spaghetti one night. We'll have fish and macaroni and cheese another night, beans and hot dogs every Saturday night.
Well, it's probably a fairly balanced diet then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Our dietary needs are taken care of as far as, you know, being nutritious and wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
May not always taste the greatest, but it's kind of hard to do that for 800 or 900 people anyway.
Now, do you know, is that cooked on premises, or is there a catering company?
Yeah, right here. The prisoners do the cooking.
Under
the tutelage of a host of kitchen staff. We got one man here that does the cooking, call him Pez. Used to work at the Navigator.
Oh, as a cook?
Yeah. He actually went to school for it for a couple of years. He's low on the totem pole in there, but I've seen an improvement since he was brought on. Good guy.
Hmm.
I wanted to touch back on the violence in here.
Yes, yes, please do.
You know, like I was saying, when a guard, which, you know, was an exception to the rule, not, you know, out of the ordinary, but somebody, you know, like this guy recently, the property officer, if they're not held in check, it's going to culminate in a real serious incident. And there's no way to, you know, I mean, you can enlighten the people and they just pretend that, you know, they didn't know it was going to happen. And they know very well it's going to happen. This guy's allowed to do that. And the mentality of letting these people do what they want. We get the recreation sergeant. You know, the Muslims are not allowed to have their prayer oil. They got to get down there at a certain time once a week and they can use a little prayer oil and pray. But they pray every day, several times a day, and they should be using their oil. They don't want the odor of that prayer oil to be smelled in the units. They think that, well, if somebody's smoking marijuana or a cigarette, they could hide the smell with the fragrance of the prayer oil.
Oh, I see, and then they could end up being deprived of their prayer oil entirely.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But, you know, I don't see that, you know, I mean, you could do a lot of things to kill the smell in the air, but you can use your soap and water.
But going back to violence, what's the answer to that? Because, you know, if things are being overseen by management, you know, the wardens and the four deputy wardens and so on, who else is there to make sure that everybody's working professionally?
Absolutely nobody. There's nobody forcing these people in here. If the sergeant makes a rule, the warden won't even necessarily know that that's a rule that's being enforced. They just have free license to do what they want. The religious thing, that taking the oil from the Muslims, breaking up the Asatru, to saying, oh, you're a race-based gang, taking their religious books and medallions, taking the Christians and killing the Kairos program, saying you're not going to congregate anymore, we're suspending it. They did this for 6 months, once when we first came out here, and they did it again now, and it's been 2 months. No Christian fellowship for those of us there. And then the sergeant makes a rule that if you go into a religious service, you can't come out to go to the bathroom or to do anything. And if you go to the activities building on your recreation period, you're allowed to take advantage of the services available to you on your recreation period that are there. But, you know, whether it's education, library, canteen, playing basketball in the gym or lift weights or whatever, shoe pool, you can do that. And then you can go back to your living area at the end of the recreation period, or you can switch from activity to activity. But the chapel part of that, this whole building is set up on a corridor so that there are windows along each wall. Even the barber shop, they can look in and see you. If you're in prayer, they can look in and they can see you. But they're taking the religious part and saying you can't do religion and anything else. If you're over here for religion, your whole rec period's for religion, or an hour of it, and when you're done, you got to go back. Well, if your prayer service is for an hour and you still got an hour and a half, 2 hours of recreation, you lose that. So, well, just don't go to your religious program. You know, it seems to be the mentality.
Hmm.
Everybody wants to play softball. We're all looking forward to it.
But shouldn't they see religion as a... remember what Karl Marx thought, the opiate of the masses. It keeps things calmed down. You get a larger perspective in your life if you're going through your religious services.
Well, it's the recklessness that... In the management of the place. I mean, before we came out here, we bought our own personal clothes. We saved the state tons of money on buying our clothing. We bought it ourselves. That provided a sense of identity, you know, how you dressed, how you carried yourself. You know, they took that away to make it so every prisoner looks the same. Nobody's different from anybody else. You're all the same. You're all under our thumb, and you're all going to stay down. They just stripped you of that identity. Then they took away our craft room. You know, the prison showroom was left bequeathed to the prisoners. It became a state benefit, you know. The lady that died, her name was Miller, I believe, didn't leave the state of Maine a business to flourish and to compete with local businesses. They left the prisoners with an opportunity to take care of their children while they're in prison and to set up some kind of livelihood for when they get out. They'll have something to get started with. That just kind of like went straight to hell. And they took it for themselves, made themselves the beneficiaries.
Hmm.
And then, you know, with the programming and everything out here, we had an inmate. My friend Charles Lamani was interviewed with me by the Portland Phoenix and the Rockland Free Press.
Right.
He was mentioned not by name, but in an article, I believe it was in the Kennebec Journal yesterday, it got sliced open with a razor under his arm and on his thigh. Two other inmates attacked him. I guess they caught it on tape. But another one, day before yesterday, I don't know who he was walking to lunch, and he got hit in the head repeatedly with a heavy object, a rock or a lock in a sock, and possibly got his jaw broken. He had to be taken out in an ambulance on a stretcher. But these incidents, you know, I mean, like three incidents in a week, you know, it just, you know, it's seemingly by design. You know, when you have certain prison staff that are permitted to just provoke prisoners at will, mm-hmm. and your complaints go unanswered, nobody does anything about it. You file a grievance, they say, oh, well, you know, you didn't do it in time, so we're not going to investigate or whatever, you know?
And the frustration level rises up in all that.
Exactly. And then you add to that, you take away the softball leagues, you're not going to participate in this, and you're not going to have that. And, I mean, you attack all the religious groups. All the major religious groups have been hit. I mean, I don't understand how any administrator can call that administration. If we had some civilian oversight in here where the public said, listen, these people are coming back to us. What you do with them in there is our business. So we're not asking you. We're telling you this is how you're going to run your ship. They don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that at all. They have the public in their grip. The public will do what they're told. They'll shut their mouths, pay their taxes, and go on about their business. That's the attitude this place has towards the public. They'll try to scare the hell out of the public when they tell the public, well, if you don't give us more money, we're going to have to let the rapists and the murderers go free. But, yeah, the guy that grew pot or stole something, you know, he'll still be... It's the murderers and the rapists are always the ones that are going to be the first ones out the door. And that's just to get the public, you know, scared. And it's how they built this place. We need a new prison. No, you don't. They gave them $3 million to fix up the old one.
Mm-hmm.
And they fought arduously for the change in the good time law. The Department of Corrections was right on that, knowing full well in advance it was going to cause a population explosion. Once the population exploded, yeah, we're going to have to let these rapists and murderers go free. Yeah. And, oh, no, we'll build a new prison. You know, and they bypassed the voters on the whole deal.
Boy, you'd wish that it couldn't happen here, but there it is.
Yeah, they took it. They just simply took what they needed from the public, in a manner of speaking. It's just how they did it, you know. You can sneak up behind some little old lady in church, and while her head's bowed, you can reach in her pocketbook and take money out of her wallet. Or you can break into her house in the middle of the night and take it, you know. I mean, it's just a matter of how. She's still getting robbed, and the taxpayers are getting robbed.
We're talking with Dean Brown, our inmate correspondent at Maine State Prison. And while you can't call right now, you can call after he hangs up in a little while. And if you have any comments, at 594-0721. So Dean, what you're saying is that there, for whatever reason, the type of participative religion that's been going on with the Muslims, with the Ksatru, whatever you call that, and the Christian Fellowship, that's all being really, the administration there has been kind of persecuting them and eliminating them in some ways.
Well, the administration jump up and say, we didn't know anything about it. But they know all about it because they're not keeping their underlings in check.
Hmm.
They're giving them free license to do as they please. You know, they can make whatever rules they want. There's no fighting them.
Hmm.
There's no saying, listen, this rule of yours is not in the rule book. It hasn't been processed through proper channels.
Mm-hmm.
It's just being enforced because you feel like enforcing it. And it doesn't matter if the rest of the sergeants know about it. They either enforce it or they don't. It's just, you know, where are the rules?
Where are the rules? Well, that's an awful good question. And looks like we're going to have to wait for another legislature. This one's all wrapping up for them to make any changes, and it'll be, we'll try to see at the end of this one whether they've done anything to make things more rational in the Maine State Prison.
Mm. All that. You know, what's interesting is in that Kennebec Journal article, the last sentence, totally out of context with the entire article, has nothing to do with anything mentioned or even remotely hinted at in the article. The last sentence says, the prison population for the Maine State Prison in Warren and the Boulder Correctional Facility right down the road from the prison is 1,100 inmates, Merrill said. I mean, who cares? You know, it has nothing to do with the context of two prisoners being assaulted. They just throw that in there because it's a reminder, oh, we're overcrowded. They're fighting like hell to get another 500-bed facility.
Well,
and they've taken these little opportunities to exploit a situation that they have full control over. They can, you know, they can alleviate the tension in here instead of, or just by not provoking it. But they choose not to.
Huh. Well, we'll see what happens. As we know, an awful lot of reporters are very easy to gull.
Mm.
You know, reporters in Maine, often they simply work in Maine just to get started, for they want to go off to Boston and New York and the other higher-paying things. So you have this sort of endless stream of amateurs that these prison spokesmen, government spokesmen, and other things can just sort of run right over.
Yeah, it's a lot like the training for these guards here. I mean, you wonder who started it all. You know, where did they get their training? They get the same training from the same group of people that just based on the mentality, we can do what we want.
Hmm.
I'd like to see them do some training that, you know, that other states go through. You know, you watch that on MSNBC, the program called Lockup or Lockdown. You see Supermaxes all around the country. You see people in the Supermax. They've got a TV. They've got books and educational opportunities and stuff while they're there. And those people are put in there for doing violent things to staff and other prisoners. That most of the people in the Supermax over here didn't even do anything violent. You know, if I get caught smoking a cigarette right now, I'm going over to that Supermax. They're going to put me in a cell over there.
My gosh.
So,
that's
kind of crazy.
Yeah. Well, I quit smoking back in February.
Congratulations.
So,
but you want one right now, too, don't you?
Well, when you mention it right then,
I never stopped.
It's like alcoholism, I'm afraid. You know, you get so much of it in your blood and your system over 20 years or 30 years that just stopping is
that's it.
Your whole system gets
when
used to it.
Like six or so.
Huh. All right. Well, look, we've been talking with Dean Brown. He's our inmate at Maine State Prison. And if people wanted to write to you, how do they do that?
Just simply put my name and address, 807 Cushion Road, Warren, Maine, on the envelope. Make sure it has a readable name and return address.
And you can get letters, but what are the restrictions on that? Because I know there's some guidelines on what you can get in the mail.
Photocopied or downloaded internet material cannot be sent in unless it's political, religious, or legal.
Okay.
And
books?
Books and magazines and stuff have to come from a publisher.
Okay, and as far as, like, sending cookies or things like that, forget it?
Yeah, with a hacksaw blade in it. Cookie with a hacksaw
right,
blade.
Sure. No loaves of bread.
No, they don't allow that.
No packages, then?
No, some prisons do.
Hmm.
Some prisons, like when I was in New Hampshire State Prison at Christmas time, they gave you the month of December and the month of January. You could order up to 2 packages, 5 pounds each, from, like, Fanny Farmer or...
Once again, from a business that...
Swiss Colony, yeah, because you know that the likelihood of a company putting a loaded gun in a 3-pound salami is like, you know, probably
right.
not going to happen.
Fruitcake, whatever. Huh. Alrighty.
It's crazy.
Well, so, okay, well, so be forewarned there, folks. And once again, that address?
807 Cushing Road, Dean Brown, Warren, Maine, 048. 54? Yeah, I believe that's it.
04854.
Yeah, Warren.
Okay, and good enough. Well, look, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
And we're going to take a look at this whole religion question and see what some of the religious figures outside the prison think of this restriction that's going on.
Yeah,
and,
crazy.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that next week.
All righty,
well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, right. Goodbye.
See ya. Well, you know, that just goes to show that people have rights, and they're natural rights that people have, and that's a very important thing to realize, that even if you're behind bars and looking to be there for some time, you still have an essential human dignity that needs to be dealt with and accepted by all that work there.